Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Later on, I'll be joined by an award-winning horticulturist and garden writer. Her new book, Secret Gardens of East Anglia, is out now. It's Barbara Siegel. My thanks to my producer, Charlie Jones, and to Thompson & Morgan, sponsors of this week's podcast. Well, as I rather indicated last week, it's been a busy 8 days. I was up in Cheshire for the 4 Acres show on the Wednesday. Then I went to Blooms of Bressingham, saw Adrian, fantastic, his garden, on Thursday. At a funeral on Friday. It was the funeral of the wife of Ben Harvey, Betty Harvey. And Ben was the principal at the college where I trained in 54, 56. And one of the things the Harveys did was to invite all the students up for coffee one evening. It was a bit of a nerve-wracking experience, actually, for us rather greenhorn students, but they were very kind, and the church was absolutely packed, quite rightly. She was a great lady, fondly remembered. And then on Saturday, I went off to Wisley to see the RHS Wisley show. Boy, the grass had been torn up quite a bit there. And then I had Sunday in the garden, thank goodness, before I went to Birmingham for the Glee exhibition. And now, of course, back in London, the Sun office for this recording. A lot's happened, I'll tell you, in those 8 days. And we'll have some reports in the paper on the 30th of September and more on the podcast here over the coming weeks. One interesting bit of news this week is celeriac rice. Yeah, I can see you asking, what on earth is he on about now? Apparently, as a base for risottos and microwaved for curry, if you chop celeriac roots up into little tiny pieces, it can be used just like rice. Waitrose are actually offering it. I also hear that spiralizers, I don't know whether you've heard about those, are being blamed for the decline in conventional pasta because cooks are substituting spiralized vegetables instead of pasta. Well, it'll be very healthy for them, won't it? I remember just a few weeks ago, Colin Randall, the potato wizard from Thompson & Morgan, was demonstrating how to spiralise potatoes. Actually, he should have practised it once or twice before he went in front of a group of the gardening press, because it took him a few minutes to get the spirals to spiral. But interesting development. Now, they say that a farmer's boots are the best fertiliser, and I think perhaps the gardener's eyes go along the same route. I noticed one or two leaves in the centre of the sprout, one of the sprouts near the path, was getting holes in it. You know, I'd sprayed for caterpillar, but all the whole plants were netted to keep cabbage whites off. But when I looked right in the centre, there was a little tiny slug eating things away. You know, the sprouts must be 2.5 feet high, so wet weather encourages them, I suppose, to climb up. But boy, you do need to keep your eyes open, and if you can, walk about the garden once or twice a day and get jobs done at just the right time. Boy, it can save a lot of effort later. Now, at this time of year, of course, the Christmas hyacinths will be arriving in the shops. It's just useful to know how they get hyacinths to grow quickly and flower in time for Christmas. The hyacinth growers lift the bulbs as soon as they can, that's as soon as the leaves have yellowed, and then they put them in a very warm store so that the bulbs have that feeling of a concentrated summer. And when they've had a few weeks at really quite a high temperature, they drop the temperature So the bulbs then go through a concentrated autumn. And when we buy the prepared hyacinths this time of year, they think it's Christmas. And so when we pot them up, of course, they make root very quickly and grow very quickly. I can give you one or two tips. I think that they're best grown singly, the hyacinth bulbs, in a 9 centimetre or 3.5 inch pot. Make sure the compost is nice and damp first, and if it is damp enough, when you squeeze a handful really tight, the moisture should just come from between your fingers. So once you've got this really moist, general purpose potting compost, fill the pots loosely, cross them off at the top, and then screw the bulb through 180 degrees into that loose compost, pushing it down, so it's in for about half its depth. And then it should be at just about the right firmness. Once you've got these bulbs singly potted, then get a piece of polythene. You can open up an old compost bag and spread it out against a north-facing wall or somewhere cool and shaded. Space the potted bulbs out over that and then cover them either with old potting compost or dry leaves or something, and pull the plastic right over the top so they're in the dark and the cool and damp. Keep an eye on them, and if the compost does dry out, it's not very likely, but if it does, then just obviously give them a water, but don't bring them indoors until you've got 2 inches of shoot, and then, boy, they'll grow when you bring them indoors in late November, early December. And the beauty of having them singly is that you can match bulbs at the same stage of growth, so that when they're transferred into decorative bulbs, they all flower at the same time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Now today, I have what I'd like to think is a very special friend to have a chat to, Barbara Siegel. Barbara, you have that lovely South African accent.
It comes and goes.
Oh, does it? Well, I don't mind if you switch it on a bit. And if I sound a bit husky today, it's because I'm afraid I've gone down with one of these summer colds, which are a cursed nuisance.
Well, you need a little bit of honey and lemon then.
I do, and perhaps a drop of whiskey
when
I go to bed. Barbara, I think when we first met, you had a lovely little presentation book, The Holly and Ivy.
I did indeed, Peter. I've got a copy of it in front of me.
It was a charming book and a perfect gift. I think you launched it Christmas time, didn't you, Edith?
That's right. And we definitely saw it as a gift book. It had a little red and green ribbon around the cover. And it all came about because I lived in a house called Holly Cottage. And I started thinking about holly and ivy and those plants that we associate with Christmas.
And so was that the start of your garden writing career?
I think so. Yes, it was. I'd written for a publishing company called Marshall Cavendish, who had done some gardening part works, but those never were on the newsstands. They were sort of, you subscribed to those. And I'd always been interested in botany at school, so that's my sort of back connection with plants.
And we'd also work together, if work is the right word, with what was then the Garden Writers Guild and is now called the Garden Media Guild.
That's right. I think you were the main mover, and I was one of the people who were thrilled to be invited to an early meeting at Wisley.
But you've been an unbelievably loyal supporter of that organisation. You know, I mean, I've dropped back over the years, but you've sort of really worked away at that.
Well, I love doing things for it. In particular, I enjoyed editing its magazine for a number of years. And at one time, I think I was even chairman, as you were in the early days.
That's right. Barbara, part of the reason for bringing that up is that I had an email yesterday from Chris Baines, the wildlife garden fellow, who we actually interviewed here on the podcast a month or two ago. And he had this email, if you could bear me the time. It comes from Jim Ashton, who, along with his brother Joel, run Hazelwood Landscapes Limited. We're based in South Lincolnshire, but travel nationwide, designing, installing and promoting all things wildlife garden. Last weekend, we were thrilled to win Best Stand Commercial Sector and Best Stand Best In Show at the Bird Fair Rutland Water for our wildlife garden. So they were pretty successful. Mm. And the reason I wanted to write this to Chris is that about 20 years ago, when I was a boy, I read the very first time How to Make a Wildlife Garden. And quite honestly, Chris, that book changed my life. From the moment I read your book, I wanted nothing more than to build homes for wildlife in my mum's small garden, and consequently got in trouble for cutting a hole in the shed door to convert into a bird hide. And I've been on a mission ever since. I understand you're a busy man and don't want to take up any more of your time, but I just want you to know that everything I do with my work started from reading your book, and you're a real hero to me. I mean, we don't realise, I think, when we write books and articles, how much influence we could have.
No, it's a lovely, lovely letter.
Because, I mean, you've written quite a list of books. You know, I went on to the internet and I was surprised how many titles. You're an industrious lady.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Yes, I'm surprised sometimes when I go there and see what I've written. But they've all been books that I've loved doing. And, you know, the Holly and the Ivy was followed by The Christmas Tree, which was also a little presentation book. And then I like to think I started writing about gardens and gardening properly.
And particularly herbs. Isn't that something of an interest of yours?
It is. I love growing herbs. And I edit the Herb Society's magazine, which is called Herbs.
How long have you done that then?
Well, this is my second stint as editor. I was editor for a period of about 5 or 6 years, some years ago, and then I left them for a while, and about 5 years ago, they asked me if I'd come back.
I bet they did, yeah.
So I'm doing it again and enjoying meeting people who love growing herbs for cooking. Some people use them medicinally. But I just love them in food, and they're such good garden plants as well.
Yeah, well, we've got some fantastic things when you think of rosemary and lavender. But another reason for wanting to get you on air here was the latest publication, Secret Gardens of East Anglia, a private tour of 22 gardens, written by Barbara Siegel, with photographs by the late Marcus Harper. I mean, how sad.
Oh,
that
very
we've lost Marcus, yeah.
Mm.
Lovely man.
I've been writing a little bit today for my own blog about really how we did the book, because I wanted to, you know, make a little appreciation of how wonderful he was in those years when he wasn't very well.
I mean, I'm amazed at the quality of the gardens that you found. And you visited all 25?
Oh, 22, yes.
Sorry, 22.
22, yes. Yeah. And a few more, because there were many we would have liked to have included, but some that we had to make a decision not to because their owners had put them on the market and we felt that we couldn't include them for that reason in case they sold and it was a different owner.
And as I thumbed the pages, you know, there are some gardens that I know. You know, I can see one from Hoverton Hall, for example.
Yes.
And I'm sure I did a short TV programme for BBC Look East on the gardener's cottage at Hoverton. You know, when I saw that picture, it sort of brought that back.
It's a very, very charming gardener's cottage. And in fact, I was there on Saturday because they were celebrating the fact that they have been open to the public for 25 years.
What a coincidence.
Mm.
Now, of all these gardens, Did you have a favourite, or wouldn't you be? Wouldn't you be?
That would be telling. No, I couldn't really choose. I liked them all for different reasons. It would be too hard.
Well, I mean, looking at Reveningham Hall, for example, there's a really lovely border with lupins. I mean, I like lupins.
Mm.
And there's some really stunning flowers there.
The border there has been there for a long time, but obviously the plants, you know, are changed and renewed. But it was Sir Nicholas's mother, Lady Priscilla Bacon, I think, who first planted that.
At this time of the year, what garden would you sort of recommend as well worth a visit?
Well, I think I would go to Wicken Hall, which is near Bury St Edmunds, because it's got late summer interest in the hot garden with heleniums and dahlias, you know, those hot colours. Alting Wick, which is in Essex, is actually open on Friday and on Sunday, I think. Probably its last openings this year for the National Garden Scheme.
Well, that's worth visiting in the spring, isn't it? Because it has fantastic tulips, doesn't it?
Fantastic tulips, but it's also got this amazing exotic perennial, tender perennial display in the summer, and lots of dahlias, bananas, grasses, and those lovely sort of tall willowy perennials like Verbena benariensis, and can't think of another one now.
So we've got Suffolk covered and Essex covered. What about Norfolk?
Oh, well, Norfolk, I don't know how this happened, but of the 22 gardens, there are 7 in Norfolk, so I think Norfolk did very well out of all of this. But I think at this time of year, I would probably say Hunworth Hall, which people would have to get in touch with the owner, and his email is in the book, because it's rarely open. But that garden is notable for its wonderful hedges and topiary. So yeah. I think at this time of year it would still be looking very good.
Yeah. I mean, there are several gardens with quite strong topiary features, aren't there?
Yes.
You know, they're quite demanding to keep those trimmed
in
perfect state.
The Hunworth Hall garden, the owner was a teenager there when his parents owned the property, and he started cutting the hedges then. I don't think he realised that he was going to have that to do in his adult life. He's gone on planting them. He says it takes 3 weeks to cut them all.
Boy, that's some patience, isn't it? And presumably he used mechanical means for doing that.
Well, I think it's a combination, because some of the topiary must need a little bit of individual care.
I'm just trying to think of the garden north of Cambridge. It'll come to me in a minute. The head gardener there was very keen on straight hedges, beech hedges.
Anglesey Abbey.
Couldn't think of the name for the minute.
That's
and
right.
The head gardener's retired there now. But I was walking round with him, and all the hedges were so straight cut, you know, absolutely, yes, to a level. And I was sort of referring to this, and he said, yes, there's a beech hedge round the back. And the gardener said to me, you know, do we need to worry about pulling up a line? No one's going to see that one out there. And he said, I'll see it. That attention to detail. Eh?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, he is Richard Todd, and he was... He helped the garden at number 8 in the book, Kirtling Tower, because that's Lord Fairhaven's garden. And, of course, Lord Fairhaven was from Anglesey Abbey. And the Richard Todd helped with the establishment of Kirtling Tower Garden. So I got to meet him again, which was lovely.
He's a great character, isn't he? He can use a spade. I like people who can use a spade. Our Horticultural Society went and visited his home garden.
Yes.
And by the back door, he has 2 enormous recycled coppers. And there's a hosta in each one. They are enormous.
That's
goodness.
Right. And probably not a slug in sight.
No, I don't think a slug would dare raise its head in Richard's garden.
Definitely not.
Now, what of the future then? Barbara, what have you got on the stocks now? I mean, when you finish a book, for me, it was almost like punishment. I would try and write so many words every day with my eye on the end.
Yes,
and when you send the last one off, it's such a relief to have it finished.
It is. It's a relief. And then you think, what am I going to do now?
And then start another one. Yes, and punish yourself again.
Punish yourself again, yes. Yeah. Now, I haven't got a book on the stocks at the moment, but I'm doing a little bit of garden visiting and I'm editing the magazines. The other one that I edit is for the Chartered Institute of Horticulture. The magazine's called The Horticulturist, so that's aimed at professionals in horticulture and gives me another sort of side of the garden horticulture world to be involved in.
Well, I really look forward to receiving that. There's been some really good articles in recent editions, hasn't there?
There have, thank you.
There was a lady who was doing work on soil treatments for red currants, which...
That's right, she ran a little experiment on her allotment with how effective some of the soil adjuvants are.
And you get the messages from commercial world too, which have lessons for all of us in terms of plant cultivation.
That's right. If we can spread them out to the amateur from the professionals, it's great.
I wish you every success with Marcus and your book.
Thank you so much.
Secret Gardens of East Anglia. People must go out and get that.
Thank you, Peter.
A quick word about what's on. At Ford Appy Garden Festival, if you buy a VIP ticket for Saturday the 16th or Sunday the 17th, you'll be entered into a draw and the chance for two people to win a meeting with Christine Walkden and Charlie Dimmock and have a glass of champagne with them. That'd be a bit of fun, I think. Well, they're both very good fun, and I think they both like a glass of champagne. So you should be in very good company. There's 150 exhibitors there, specialist nurseries, artisan food producers. I'm not sure what an artisan food producer is, but I presume it's local good food. And then there's local arts and crafts, live music, and you should have a really good day. Thanks again to our sponsor, Thompson & Morgan, and to my producer, Charlie Jones. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.